MyAudiobooks.ai presents 30 Years Behind, The Quest to Bring Sildenafil to Women. On August 26, 2026, a small biotechnology company announced that a study it had quietly run on a topical cream had been published in a medical journal. And with that publication, a drug that has existed since the 1990s completed a journey it never made the first time around. The drug is sildenafil, the active ingredient in the most famous pharmaceutical of the modern era, the one that made a blue diamond a global symbol. The cream is designed for women, a topical formulation applied locally to treat female sexual arousal disorder, a condition with no approved therapy in the United States. The published data showed the compound was well tolerated, with minimal systemic exposure in postmenopausal women. Behind that dry sentence sits a 30-year story of asymmetry, hesitation, and a regulatory pathway now being walked one small company at a time. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. The asymmetry is the story's foundation. So start with the arithmetic. Sildenafil was approved for erectile dysfunction in 1998. In the decades since, the drug and its class transformed the treatment of male sexual dysfunction into a multi-billion dollar market, served by dozens of formulations, generics, telehealth platforms, and an advertising genre of its own. Over the same three decades, the number of FDA-approved drug treatments for female sexual arousal disorder has stood at zero, not one. The condition, persistent difficulty with physical arousal causing distress, distinct from desire disorders, affects a meaningful share of postmenopausal women by clinical estimates, and the physiology is not mysterious. The same nitric oxide signaling that sildenafil enhances in men exists in the genital tissue of women. The science traveled. The medicine did not. Some numbers sharpen the asymmetry beyond dispute. Erectile dysfunction has, at various counts, more than 20 FDA-approved treatments across oral drugs, injectables, and devices. Female sexual dysfunction, a term covering desire, arousal, and orgasm disorders collectively, had, until 2015, exactly zero approved drug therapies of any kind. Even after the first approval that year, the tally for women stands at two oral agents aimed at desire, both with prescribing restrictions and modest uptake, and nothing at all aimed at the arousal component. Researchers have estimated that female sexual dysfunction, taken collectively, affects roughly 40% of women at some point, a prevalence that would command entire therapeutic franchises in any other field of medicine. Whatever the precise figure, the gap between the burden and the pharmacopoeia is not a rounding error. It is the shape of an industry's priorities over three decades. The reasons the medicine did not travel are worth understanding because they explain why a topical cream published in 2026 counts as news. The first is anatomical and pharmacological. Oral sildenafil for women produced disappointing trial results in the 2000s, in part because the drug disperses systemically and the female arousal response integrates blood flow with neural and hormonal signaling in ways a single systemic agent struggles to reach. The second is commercial. Drug development follows predictable returns, and a series of failed female sexual dysfunction programs in the 2000s taught the industry that the market was difficult to size, the endpoints were contested, and the reputational risk of a female Viagra headline cycle was high. The third is regulatory historical. The FDA itself has been sued over its rejection of a female libido drug, and the resulting controversy, including debate about whether the agency applied a different standard to female sexual health, forced a public reckoning with the gap. The result of all three? A drug class that reshaped one half of sexual medicine left the other half waiting. Section 1. What the new data actually shows. The study, published in Menopause, the Journal of the Menopause Society, evaluated a 3.6% topical sildenafil cream in postmenopausal women, the population where the localized delivery thesis matters most, because systemic absorption is the thing both the safety profile and the dosing logic depend on. The headline findings, per the company's announcement, the formulation was well tolerated, and systemic exposure was minimal. The drug stayed, in pharmacokinetic terms, where it was put. For a drug whose oral form is famous for systemic interactions and blood pressure caveats, local delivery with minimal absorption is the entire engineering point. The cream aims to reproduce the local pharmacology without the whole body exposure. The company developing it, Daré Bioscience, is pursuing approval through the 505(b)(2) pathway, the regulatory route for products that rely in part on existing data about an already approved drug, and has simultaneously begun offering a compounded version, the legal mechanism by which bespoke formulations of approved drugs can be dispensed before a commercial approval exists. That dual track is a deliberate strategy. The compounded cream generates near-term revenue and real-world use data while the FDA submission advances. The Phase 1 results are the foundation of the safety case. The efficacy case, as with any arousal disorder therapy, will rest on validated endpoint instruments in later phase trials, which is where the female dysfunction programs of the 2000s famously struggled. Understanding why endpoints are hard here is understanding why this field stalled. Male erectile dysfunction has a physical, observable, binary-ish endpoint. Arousal in women is measurable physiologically, but the clinical question is distress and function, which live in validated questionnaires rather than pressure gauges. The field spent years arguing about which instrument captures meaningful benefit, and the FDA's eventual guidance, requiring both physiological and patient-reported evidence, raised the evidentiary bar precisely where the physiology-to-symptom link is most complicated. A topical agent with minimal systemic exposure simplifies the safety case dramatically. It does not simplify the efficacy case at all. The patient side of that endpoint problem deserves its own sentence because it is the quietest part of the story. Women with arousal disorder have spent decades being routed by default to counseling, to hormonal explanations, or to nothing, while their male partners left the same clinic with a prescription. Clinical validation of a local therapy would do something no questionnaire can. It would give physicians something concrete to offer and give patients a category of conversation that currently has no script. The history of women's health is dense with conditions that were undertreated not because they were mysterious, but because no one had run the trials. Endometriosis, postpartum depression, dysmenorrhea. And each of those stories turned when a first approved therapy made the condition discussable. The endpoint instruments are hard. So is 30 years of nothing. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden science and mechanics behind the headlines. Section 2. The market that was left on the table. The commercial history of female sexual medicine is a museum of cautionary tales, and every one of them shaped the current landscape. The most instructive is the drug that finally broke the zero, flibanserin, approved in 2015 after two rejections and a campaign accusing the agency of gender bias in drug review. The drug worked, modestly, by a validated metric, but its launch collided with a boxed warning about alcohol interactions, restricted prescriber certification, an acquiescing but skeptical medical community, and a decade of disappointing sales that confirmed every fear the industry had cited for avoiding the space. The lesson the industry took? Approval is not the finish line, and the market's friction is clinical, cultural, and regulatory at once. The lesson some researchers took instead, the problem was trying to treat a localized vascular integration condition with a centrally acting brain drug, the wrong tool for the anatomy. That is the wager behind the cream. Where the approved tablet for desire acts on serotonin receptors in the brain, the topical sildenafil acts on local blood flow physiology, the mechanism with the strongest analogical evidence from the male experience. The wager is not that arousal disorders are purely vascular, the science says they are not, but that for a subset of patients, particularly postmenopausal women whose arousal physiology has changed with estrogen decline, restoring local responsiveness is the bottleneck. If the subset is real and identifiable, the cream thread the industry dropped in the 2000s becomes the thread worth pulling. The history of medicine is full of drugs that failed as pills and succeeded as devices, patches, and creams aimed at the right tissue. The market arithmetic explains why a small company is the one pulling it. A topical formulation of a decades-old generic molecule offers no patent moat on the chemistry. The value sits in the formulation, the delivery, the clinical data package, and the regulatory exclusivity available for new indications. That is a niche a Daré-sized company can occupy, and a giant cannot be bothered to. The development cost is measured in tens of millions rather than billions, and the prize, if the trials succeed, is the first approved local therapy in a category affecting millions of postmenopausal women, a market the industry once priced in the billions before abandoning it. The compounders are already dispensing. The FDA clock, if the company files, decides the rest. Section 3. What to watch? First, the regulatory filing itself. A 505(b)(2) submission for the cream would trigger the FDA's review clock and define which late-phase endpoint instruments the agency will accept, the single decision that has buried this field before. Second, the real-world data from the compounded offering. Adverse event reports and usage patterns from compounded dispensing will either build or erode the safety case in public. Third, the competitive pipeline. Other local delivery programs for female sexual dysfunction exist in various stages, and a first approval would establish the category's clinical trial template for everyone behind it. Fourth, payer behavior. If approved, whether insurers treat a topical for arousal disorder as medicine or as lifestyle, a designation that has determined the fate of every drug in this space. Fifth, the menopause market's broader moment. The field has attracted renewed investment and cultural attention in the 2020s, and a successful launch here would ride a wave that the flibanserin launch never had. Section 4. The broader pattern and the open question. The pattern is the slow correction of an historical blind spot. For 30 years, the most successful sexual medicine drug ever discovered had no female counterpart, not because the biology was absent, but because the path between biology and approved medicine ran through contested endpoints, commercial caution, and a clinical culture that treated women's sexual function as either psychological or unspeakable. The correction now arriving is arriving the way such corrections always do, through niches, reformulations, small companies willing to run the trials the giants would not, and a generation of patients who learned to ask why the answer was no. A cream published in a menopause journal is a small artifact of that correction. It is also, finally, an artifact at all. Which leaves the open question the clinical trials will answer. The phase 1 data says the drug can be delivered locally and safely, that the engineering works. The question that has waited 30 years is whether the engineering matters, whether restoring local physiology with a cream changes the clinical picture for a definable group of women, enough to clear an efficacy bar that the field's history has made exacting. If it does, the last great asymmetry in sexual medicine begins to close, and the blue diamond finally has a counterpart on the other side of the pharmacy counter. If it does not, the asymmetry was never about delivery at all, and the answer will force the field somewhere deeper. Either way, the 30-year silence is over, and the data, section by section, is starting to speak. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.